Today, we are diving into the explosive rise of the energy drink industry with the dynamic team from Zero FG. Discover their journey from a COVID-19 startup to a lifestyle brand and learn how they navigate the competitive market with unique strategies and bold moves. All that and more on today's episode of The Marketing Mad Men.
They say marketing is a madman's game. So now we turn it over to The Marketing Mad Men with Nick Constantino and Trip Job.
Happy Saturday and welcome back to The Marketing Mad Men. After technical difficulties, we're getting started and now we're more hopped up on energy drinks. So this is going to be fun. Today, this is a conversation I've wanted to have for a while. This is a topic I've wanted to cover just because I find it so fascinating the way that the energy drink industry popped out of nowhere and is just taken off. Lifestyle, culture, extreme sports, all of these things that came out of people's need for caffeine and to party longer. And anytime someone's partying longer, then I am aboard. So with me, I have the team from Zero FG. Zero FG is a partner of the station. They are a startup company, and it is a product I endorse because it is a good product. So I got the team with me. Why don't we go around? Everyone introduce yourselves real fast.
Hey, guys. I'm Sarah Lynn. I don't know where I'm supposed to look, but I'll look at y'all.
Wherever you want, girl. Don't worry about it.
It's a podcast.
The video is just an added bonus.
Hey, guys. I'm Sarah Lynn. I do the social media.
And yes,
media.
We put the pretty girl on the front.
Yeah, I'm the star of the show. I do the social media at Zero FG.
I am Brandon Grubbs. I'm the director of operations. I run the company. I just work directly with the owner, Josh Askew. I'll give him a plug. He's the owner of Zero FG. And yeah, I run the company. And fun times are had all the time.
Soft flex.
I'm Jack Spencer. I work in marketing. I wear a lot of different hats. We kind of all work together on a lot of different things. We're a small team. We're just trying to make the best of it.
Bootstrap it, baby. So I think that they're going to write books about this. No one needs to hear me talk about the history of energy drinks, but man, it's been a hell of a 25 years. I mean, You went from, it was coffee, right? I grew up in an Italian. My mother was born in Italy. Like, you drink coffee from when a time I'm like 8, which probably explains a lot about me. But like, we have espresso at 8 and wine, which probably explains more about me. And then there was Coca-Cola, and those are the only things. Like, I loved it. I was drinking coffee in my house. My father was like, caffeine-free soda. Caffeine's the problem. Like, you've never been to Nana's house for dinner. So, but then all of a sudden, let's start with the Red Bull boom. It proliferated so fast, like a rocket ship. And and Rockstar and Monster, and who got bought by who? Who invested in who? Who's a Vietnamese and Viennese conglomerate? I mean, the stories are all crazy. What I thought was, you know, the way they blended, again, no one sells a product, right? No one's selling widgets. You're selling a lifestyle. And if you can make your product a lifestyle-based product, it almost sells itself because people are buying in to the culture and the lifestyle more than they are this, right? This is a super good formula, but this is providing caffeine and things that people can find other ways and sometimes easier ways. There's gum now. And so it's the lifestyle. You have to buy on the lifestyle. So before I toot any of your competitors' horns, what I want to start with is, what's a Zero FG?
We lean into that as much as we can without using the F word because of ways to get in retailer outlets and things. We don't want the F word always out there, but most people understand what it means.
Yeah.
There are few that do not, and we joke around with folks. We say it's zero field goals. You know, we say it's zero force gravity. I guess I can say this on this podcast. We were in NASCAR in the beginning, and NASCAR asked us what it meant, and we told them zero force gravity because at the time –
yeah, but if you're pulling zero G's, right? If you're doing a turn fast enough, you can lean into that, right?
But because technically it does not mean anything. It's up to your interpretation. But to us, it does mean zero f- given because of the culture that we have created with the product.
Love it. And I think it plays well into what the industry is, right? Because, you know, you see people, and my favorite is like the, you know, it's 8 o'clock in the morning and you see a girl walking around and she doesn't want coffee. So she's sitting with a straw and drinking an energy drink.
Right?
Those are the people that just don't care. Like, you don't care what people think about you. Everyone knows that one girl at the office that would drink like 6 energy drinks a day and just didn't care what people thought. Everybody else is trying to be classy with their Starbucks. And no.
You need the hard stuff.
So it fits the vibe well. Yeah. But again, it's about a lifestyle. Talk a little bit about, let's go to entry phases. We're talking a ground up company, right? Sure. You guys are a startup. So, you know, we're in the design phase, we're whiteboarding. Mm-hmm. Okay. Where'd the name come up? What was the thought process? Where'd the lifestyle come in? What was the vision for all this?
So the vision came from the owner, Josh Askew, and it actually came with during the COVID times when we had the 14 days to slow the spread. He knew that he wanted to create an energy drink. He did not know what he wanted to name the energy drink.
Okay.
Zero FG came to his brain during those 14 days to slow the spread because, quite honestly, he was a little ticked off that they shut him down, told everybody to go home, you know, and they were trying to control how we all lived our day-to-day life. So zero FG came to his brain. I know that he called another guy that's in the business with him and said, hey, dude, I got the name. And from that point on, they knew that not only did they have a cool name for the product, but they had a lifestyle and a culture that they could push with the product.
I love it. So there's two parts here. One is that you didn't whiteboard anything. You started with the top and then worked your way down.
Correct.
A lot of people start at the bottom and try to pull up to this. They're trying to, but you started with the lifestyle from the top. That's different.
Yeah.
Two, I cannot believe, now this will be my 100th episode of doing the show. I cannot believe how often COVID comes up.
Right.
And I cannot believe how much creative force came from that. And look, I'm not going to say, I'll keep my politics and my personal opinions out of it.
Yeah.
But the amount of creative juice that came out of it just goes to show what this country and the world can do when they're put in those circumstances.
Right. No doubt.
So I don't want to say good comes out of it. You know, you don't want to say good came out of 9/11 either, but New York was more together than I've ever seen anything, right? After the Boston Marathon, watching the Yankees play Sweet Caroline. These things for Boston, these are so many things that we do very well when our backs are against the wall as a country and as a people and as a human species.
Yeah.
So I love it. Okay, so we have a name.
Yeah.
Okay, but we have no product, we have no colors, we have no text, we have no logo.
Right.
So talk about some of those stories.
And a lot of the stuff that I talk about happened before I even came on with the company. It was the owner's idea that he was bringing to life.
Sure.
They didn't know what they wanted the flavor to taste like. They didn't know what company that we were going to work with to bottle the drink, right? So that came after all of this, the name and the lifestyle. But that was a journey, honestly, to figure that stuff out and to figure out who we could co-pack with. And we finally found someone in California that that we could work with where we actually own the formula. They sent over the flavors. And to be quite honest with you, again, we weren't there. But the first formula they sent over, which is what you have here, is what was sent.
Yeah.
And they loved it.
That never happened.
They were like, oh, that's it. We want this flavor. So we didn't have to go too far in depth. Not a lot of testing on flavors and things. So they went with this. Now, I will speak on the Red Bull.
I can't believe you're so honest about it. Most people are like, we tried 74,000 flavors, painstakingly, in a basement somewhere. First one, zero cheese. You got it.
Exactly.
It was perfect. So, we talk about Red Bull, though, and Red Bull maybe not be a direct competitor of ours.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many in the market. But Josh did build this company by looking at the model that Red Bull built, right? If you know about our product, we only have one flavor, which is what we launched with, which is an original and a sugar-free. He wanted to build it after Red Bull's model. I mean, you know, have the one flavor.
Yeah.
Things have changed a little bit now because of all the competitors that are in the market, and we have people asking for more flavors. Plug now that we are working on other flavors, and that's a little more difficult than just that we came in. But that was the model that he wanted to build. So not only did he want to be like, you know, have the one flavor, but the culture that was surrounding it, right? Red Bull has this culture that just has blown up, and the zero FG mentality is a culture that we're trying to create with our product. And so, you know, Red Bull was someone that he looked at very closely to build our product on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like how you said they followed that model, but you did it your own way. So like, for example, if you were to ask me, you know, name Red Bull flavors, I would say sugar-free and regular. Like,
right.
I know there are other flavors. Yeah. I know there are colors, but, you know, I don't know because it wasn't part of the model. It was probably the same thing. Enough people asked, like, oh, my God, do we really have to do this? Right. You know, but I think it's important because you could skews is the word, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't have too many skews. One of the mistakes, especially in the beer industry, they try to go to market with 30 SKUs, right? The supermarket only wants two SKUs.
Yep.
They only want simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about your third level imperial hops with a, you know, Filipino sweat built into it that you're making beer out of. Like, that's just not how they want it. They want real beer. So I think people get a little too big for the britches and they're like, oh my God, I have the best idea for this. That's it. Hold on, guys. You got to sell the first
one. You got to get started.
People got to buy into it.
Yeah.
So what about logo? Was this tested? Did we send this out for a thing, or are we just going to throw? We see a zero, we see a dash through zero FGs.
So Josh kind of had the idea of the zero with a line through. He had an artist that he worked with for other things with some other ventures that he's in, and he just called her up and said, "Hey, I'm looking for a logo. This is kind of what I want. Simple, right? It's just a simple logo, but it portrays exactly what we're trying to show is just the zero folks given mentality." I don't say that often, but I'm saying that.
I brought it out of you. Okay? I brought it out of you.
I haven't heard him say it in a long time. I brought it
out of
you.
It's just a natural thing. I bring it out of people. My Yankee ass brings it out of people. It must be.
But we thought this logo, I mean, it could be very easily recognizable, right, yeah. as we grow.
The white, the white and the black supremely help.
Yes.
Yeah. Everyone else is so into colors, and I don't understand it. It does is blur.
Yeah.
You can't see it.
Yeah.
You picked, and then you have, like, the goldish hue that gives a little bit of class and sophistication
to
it.
A little luxury look.
A little luxury, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I think that it is, and again, it stands out on a shelf because everybody else is using so much color or so much whimsy that they're trying to throw into it that it's not utilitarian. And to be honest with you, I think as the world gets more and more messed up, there's nothing wrong with utility.
Yeah.
And you have a purpose for drinking this, mm-hmm. right? This is not, there's a purpose behind it, which I absolutely love. All right. So what about ingredients? So I know this is, someone made it for you, but like there's some stuff in here that like, I'm not going to say that you should drink 14 in a day, but it makes you feel a little better about drinking it. So talk about how important the ingredients were and that stuff, because in today's day and age, that is really important.
Yeah. I'll talk a lot. Jack, you want to speak on this? You want me to take it?
You start off. I'll lead into it. I'll help out.
So we have a product that has good ingredients for us. We try to tell people it's not the healthiest thing in the world, but it's definitely healthy compared to some of our competitors out there. It's got your B vitamins in there. The caffeine comes from natural green tea.
Mm-hmm.
We have like this little ingredient that we were super stoked about in the beginning. It's blue spirulina, spirulina, whatever you want to say. And we found out it's a super health.
It's algae.
Actually. It's algae. And it's good for your respiratory system. It's good for your skin. So we really played on that. But what we didn't want to build a drink that had a ton of caffeine in it, honestly. Yeah. We saw the market trending a little bit with lower the caffeine. I mean, you see stories of people that energy drinks every day having some issues and with heart and whatever.
Yeah.
So 140 milligrams of caffeine is about 2 cups of coffee. You know, most people drink
two small weak cups of coffee. A cup of Starbucks is like 260.
Right.
So preface that because it's actually the exact right amount to get you where you don't crash.
Where you don't crash.
Yes. And it's built to not chug, which is nice. I drink coffee a lot faster than I drink this. So this is like that slow release of it.
Absolutely.
Which actually it's more like tea. So actually we're going to go to a quick break. When we're going to get back, we're going to continue the conversation about this because I think the ingredients are fascinating. I think it's important. You've been listening to The Marketing Mammon on Extra 106.3 and we will be right back.
Now back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3. Nick Constantino here with the Zero FG team. We were talking about the ingredients. So one of the things that I think has changed is I don't think, even when Red Bull started, I don't think 20 years ago, people felt like they had any say in how anything was made.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, every ass on earth thinks that they can impart their wisdom, which is zero, on everything that they do. And everyone has a list of requests, mm-hmm. and there's activists and investors who somehow bought a product for $3 and think that they're entitled to change the perception of an entire company. So one, how do you deal with that? Two, how much market research did you do to find out what this ingredient list was, if people wanted it, and if this is what they actually wanted to have in their drinks?
So I love when you say the market research, because remember when I said they sent us the product and they liked it right off the bat? That's about as much research went into it in the beginning,
right.
which I know is different because the owner is just like, when he has an idea, he just wants to run with it, right? But they did tell them that they wanted a healthier type of energy drink. So we went with that. It has L-carnitine in it. It has a natural fat burner.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have any artificial colors in there, right? That's a big thing,
huge.
Especially for like my wife and the
five,
kids.
Yellow 5, man. It's
you know,
they're
going
to come back. Yes. I swear they'll be this close to autism being tied to it.
No
they're
doubt.
This close to having it done. They don't serve it in most places. And you know what they do in this stupid country? They just change the names of it.
Yeah.
So they just change the name of the same pigment because they can sneak it through. And like, God knows how much money these lobbyist groups pay the FDA to get away with it. But anyway, we'll save that for another podcast.
Yeah. Being that we've kind of worked backwards, we just had this product that hit the market. We're going out sampling. So we got a lot of feedback from customers out in the field, right, at different events and things. And mostly all good feedback as far as any of the ingredients that are in there. If we ever get any pushback, it's Splenda.
Yep.
You know, and awesome. You're super healthy folks, maybe you're athletes, the Splenda.
Then drink the regular one.
Right,
offense, there's no way to put this taste in it without having calories.
Right.
Look. You can't F with Mother Nature,
right?
Calories have sweetness. Everything that is artificial is going to kill you to some capacity,
right?
Yeah. So, and I love it. The guy's sitting there and he's pouring a bottle of vodka, some of this, and he's like, the Splenda's the problem, right? Like, we just got to throw that stuff out the window. That's why, let's call it what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Healthier than most out there.
Right.
That's what it is. So what's it like, Jack, when you're out What do they say to you? Is it taste? Are they reading the ingredients when you're sampling? Are they into it? Like, what is it? What is it like out there?
So I would say probably 1 in 10 people when we hand them out looks at the ingredients, and it is the only thing that they ever say is the sucralose. Some people say they want stevia. They think that they would rather have that sweetener rather than sucralose. In terms of sucralose, I know some people don't really respond that well to it, but it really just kind of passes through your system. Like, yeah. It's really not. Yeah. It doesn't do anything for you.
Again, there's like, just not enough studies on stevia yet.
Exactly.
It will kill you also.
Yes.
This is artificial fake things to provide something that nature did provide with in the form of sugar. Mm-hmm. So all of these things are going to be bad for you. Yeah. Whether it be the new ones coming out or the micro, your gut bio and everything, like they screw it up because it's artificially changing it. And then also when you have, you know, Diet Coke, all it does is spark your satiation and your which leads to other things and tooth decay. So everything's bad for you. Right. I'm just shocked that they're going there like, oh, sucralose.
It's not. It's not often. Yeah, it's not often.
And you're like, it's free, stupid. So take it.
We do some events at like strongman competitions we've done, and that was where we had the most. I feel like
people
talk about the sucralose, which I mean checks out, like it's the most
but these people are peak athletes that are still looking at
that one
way.
Makes
that's
a lot
a
more
story.
Sense
I'm all for it, but like don't chug a cup of Jack Daniels and be like, I can't believe there's sucralose in here.
Cigarettes.
So you're chain then, smoking.
On the other hand, like we've never really gotten complaints about the flavor. I think the only real thing is we get the original is too sweet.
Yeah.
That's really the only bad thing we've heard in terms of the actual taste and flavor of our product. So I can't really complain about that.
Put it this way, okay? If anyone got it perfectly right, there wouldn't be the industry for everybody else, right? Balancing the everything in here has a flavor profile or a chalkiness or something to it. So you're sweet, and what I love is the sour. Like that sweet sour, I'm a texture person. I like salty and sweet. I like when the things come together. The sweet and sour, that balance is what makes it so good. So again, I usually drink the sugar-free ones. I know you're masking an artificial sweetener taste, but the sour is what really balances it out. And I think honestly is what makes it go good with vodka too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, let me say my only problem with energy drinks now to get it out of the way. My only problem with energy drinks is if you drink enough energy drink and vodkas, the thing that runs out first is the energy drink. So you're running on cloud nine, Raven, glow sticks, everything's going hardcore, and then all of a sudden the energy runs out, and then you're just drunk. And it's like,
what do I do now?
The mood just changes, and you're like, how did I get to this rave? How the hell am I getting home? So I'm just saying from a guy I know. It's never happened to me before.
Of course.
What Marty told me.
But let's kind of dive a little more into your guys' day-to-day. And I think, you know, a startup company, it's become so pervasive in culture that people just think about their own. But, you know, you got to operate like a startup. You have mega competitors, corporations, companies. You know, every rich kid that has money is like, I want to start an energy drink company or a liquor company or a champagne company. You know, these are hard industries with players and veterans that have been around with establishment. So, Sarah Lynn, let's start with you, girl. Talk about your day-to-day. Talk about what you do. Talk about what you've learned and what you see when you're in your day-to-day.
Other than getting bullied by them the whole day, mostly I have my partner, Marty, who everybody thinks is my boss, but he's not. And we just come up with content after content and video ideas, scripts. And then we try to film or we go places and try to sell. We just got some neon signs, so we put up neon signs or deliver fridges. But it's super busy, but everything can be content. So we just got to film.
So I love it. I think one of the things about content, though, is now everybody has realized that. So everybody's putting out content, which weakens it a little bit. And I think also the concept of virality has changed because everyone's trying to fake being viral, which makes it not be viral.
Right.
Talk a little bit about what has worked, besides being a pretty girl on camera, talk a little bit about what has worked for you and what you've been like, I cannot believe that worked.
Honestly, when I don't try on a video, that's what's going to go viral. The bloopers do better than the actual video that I spent time and Jack filmed me and then we got the lighting. But the bloopers for it, they do numbers and acting a fool does crazy. But then when we come up with a script, it's just, you know, your regular, everybody likes it, okay. But I feel like the bloopers, when we really don't care, when I just put something together, it works so much better. And it fits Zero FG, so yeah.
Yeah, love it. And now talk about the difference. So when people talk about content, one, they don't realize how hard it is to get eyeballs on it, right? It used to be that it was really expensive to make content,
right,
but easy to get it out. Nowadays, it's cheap as to make it, but it's really hard to get it in people's hands. So talk about like what the difference between impressions and engagement and what you're looking for when you're putting this, because ultimately you're trying to sell a product, right?
Right, yeah.
Like it doesn't matter the lifestyle, what it is, you're trying to sell a product. So talk about what metrics you look at to say, okay, this is something that's really working. How much are you tracking through? What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, we're tracking through everything. I feel like we used to be looking for, you know, just clicks and views and everything, but now since we just recently got on like TikTok Shop, so we want that, I guess.
Yeah, or and e-commerce is the only place you can really track, because you can track follow through what's actually selling. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I mean, we set that up, so now we're not only looking for views and stuff like that, but we need to sell this shit. Excuse me, sorry.
Yeah, that a girl. All right, so Jack, so you're when you're at events and we've worked these together. You know, what are you looking for in events? Because that's another thing, right? COVID forced this pent-up demand that all crashed at the same time. And now all of a sudden, everyone was doing these events, revenge eventing, whatever you're going to call it. So talk about what you look for in events. Talk about where you've seen success with events. And talk about when you're on site, what you're doing to get people to try it.
So I think what we're really looking for in events is really interaction. Like we want, as just kind of going back to the content, we want to have that one crazy person give us an insane reaction that we can use on social media, push as an ad, use it for different forms of different promotion. Yeah. I think also just really, Liquid to Lips is our main goal right now, being so new. It's not only brand awareness, it's really, how do I get them to try the drink rather than like, when you go into a store, it's hard to buy a new drink you've never seen before, don't know anything about it. So we're trying to get that first step of them being able to try it without the risk involved of them having to go in and spend their money on a new product that they've never seen before. What else was it?
Well, and then when you're on site, what are things you're doing to get the reactions you're looking for?
Yeah, so I think a big one is, it is the pretty girl across from the table. It is Sarah Lynn getting attention, getting eyes.
Crazy how that still works.
Yes,
it is. Oh, wait a second. The pretty girl or the attractive man.
Yes, exactly.
Because you don't want to discredit yourself, and we also have to talk and be equally without coverage.
We do.
So as long as we say both sides of it, then we're not sexist or anything.
Yes, exactly.
So we figured it out. Yeah. So easy breezy.
So I think it's definitely helps get people's attention that come over. I mean, I see people talking to her all the time, just talking, not about anything related to energy drinks.
That's what I said. I was like, she was in a jumper. I was like, is that Sarah Lynn or is that Jennifer Lopez?
Yeah.
So, no, I'm going to start blushing.
It was the jumper. I just wish you had some big hoop earrings and a full board. But anyway, so, and look, a couple things. One, these things all have to work together. And one of the things I like, most companies feel obliged or they don't communicate, so they silo everything. Mm-hmm. So social media has this, events have this, but you're looking to get content there. Mm-hmm. You're looking to drive people to the event with that.
Exactly.
These things all have to work together. Mm-hmm. And if they don't work together, then what you're doing is you're marketing in segments and not a full picture.
100%.
Right? Yeah. Ultimately, the ideal goal for the position you guys are is people walk up to a store and say, I want it. They say, I don't have it. You say, go freaking get it.
Go get it.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's ideal. That takes a long time to embed those things in people. Mm-hmm. Right. One, because a lot of times, by the time they get into the college football game or the concert, they forgot you exist.
Yep.
So that you need that reminding piece in that same place to remind them. So I think it's all fascinating, but it's all part of this web of trying to just make yourself stand out, but also hammer home action.
Yes.
Right. Getting engagement, who cares? Getting views, who cares? Buy the product, right? You liked it, dummy.
Yes.
I saw you drink it. Like, you don't have to lie to me. If you don't like it, throw it in the garbage. It's right there.
Exactly.
You liked it. So when you're in the store, buy it.
Yeah.
Right? Buy it over this. Or maybe you're having a party at your house.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't even drink it, but you're at a party at your house and you want to have it at your house.
Yeah.
Those are an offer. That's what's
And that, I'll say that driving that action is probably the hardest thing that we deal with social media. You know, I think when we started this, we thought that if we have a video with 15 million views that our company is going to blow up, everybody's going to want to buy the product. That's not how it works, right?
No.
My wife owns a salon in town. She had 14 million views. It did nothing for her company, right? I mean, because she's just a hair salon, right?
Yeah.
But it's driving that action. And that's where I think on a day-to-day basis that we talk about, like, how do we drive that action, right? We don't just want a million views. A million views is great. It's good brand awareness, whatever. Some people see our product and maybe some people are interested, but it's really about driving that action.
If they don't buy it, it don't matter.
Yeah. To drive, which is, we're really stoked that we have this TikTok shot going up. We know some competitors have done well with that.
Yeah.
So we have just haven't even really launched it yet. We just got it all set up this week, and we're really excited about that and to see where that goes and to see if we can get some ambassadors with, not that have, you know, sometimes
the craziest following.
Right. Just, can they sell your product?
Yeah. If you have a loyal following, that's even better for
us. If you really just use one product, video. If you really try to. So, couple things to unpack here. First and foremost, the biggest problem in digital advertising as a whole is the stake that the other party has. So, for example, Facebook wants you to spend money with them. Right. They don't want you to link external links. Everything has to be through them, and they control the algorithms that dictate who does what, who goes where, who pays where, who does what, right? You can go, I can tomorrow buy 50 million impressions, tomorrow, and there's a bunch of Indonesian people in their basement clicking on things. And I only say it because like I've done it, and I've done experiments with it on my own show, on this show, just to see how all these mechanisms work. Because saying it is one thing, doing it, and it's cheap. I mean, you're talking like pennies to do these things. Yeah. So, to do things the real way, the only thing I know is it takes time.
Yes. Yeah.
And you have to commit to time. And I'm not saying 3 months. I'm saying 2 years.
Years.
And you'll get to a point, each one of you will get to a point where it'll click in your head and you say, holy crap, it was worth it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is, but it'll be that point where like this starts catching. And once it catches and the algorithms dictate you are a value proposition to the people it serves or to them, and usually TikTok's taking a cut, so now you're a value proposition to them,
right.
is when these things click over.
Yes.
Right? So for this show, for example, it was Facebook, Google, YouTube fighting over placement for this show. And once you kind of saw that jockeying happen, then all of a sudden it's like all your posts are doing well. It almost seems like it's a computer program that exists to make sure you're not full of it. And once it checks you out, it stops suppressing you.
Yes.
It's not going to help you always, but it stops suppressing you.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, every company is going to be different. Every industry is going to be different, you know, but the fact that you guys know that and you're using that and you have that in the back pocket is probably a useful tool, because I have to imagine a lot of competitors that come in and either maybe they try to expand too fast or they scale up too quickly. They're having much harder times with these things because you can easily go backwards too.
Yes. Yeah.
Like slow, I'd rather see slow, gradual success than a huge spike and then dropping, because that's when you're killed.
Right.
That's when you're killed.
Yep.
Brandon, what about day to day? What have you learned operationally? Your job previously, you were working for a big company. You were not in the day to day. What did you learn about P&Ls and operations? I don't want to bore everybody. We'll keep Sarah Lynn while you tell them. Say the boring stuff.
Boring stuff. But just day to day things of production and ingredients and maintaining all of that stuff can be a job in itself. Trying to get line time is what we have to worry about with production and things. You know, if you're going to need a truckload in, forecasting, right?
Yeah.
And that's difficult for us too, because sales aren't necessarily right where we want them to be. We're a startup company.
Right. And the more you buy, the better deal you get, but you don't want to have too many that you're sitting on in warehousing and like, and then if you hit one spark and all of a sudden your product's gone, you're screwed and you're waiting. Yes. So AI can't help. I mean, I know that, but you don't have a data set big enough for AI to help, right? Data sets, everyone's like, oh, AI. Well, you need 10 years of data with a future prediction model, which costs $1 million to have AI do anything.
Yeah, no doubt. So also sales, right? And getting our big thing. Obviously, we need to get in as many convenience stores as we possibly could. Independent
which are companies
stores,
in themselves.
Which, right. So we did that. We've spent a lot of time getting in the independent locations. Now the big deal is getting in some chains, right? Chain authorizations. Here in Atlanta, you're looking at Racetrack and QTs, but not just in Atlanta. I mean, we're looking all throughout the Southeast. And that is that's pretty big on our plate right now, is reaching out to those. Now, that's more difficult than you would think. They all want to see your data. You know, they want to see your sales. When you're in independent locations, we have stores that do really well. We have some stores that we're like, how do we get that product to even sell there? Because no one knows about our product maybe in that area. But right now, we're really working on that data. And we do think e-commerce sales, which is not something we focused a lot on in the last year and a half, because and I could talk a long time about this, because 2 years ago, I thought e-commerce was kind of like need to take a back seat.
Yeah.
When we started, as these 2 years have progressed, we have realized, wait a second, time out. We're getting behind the curve. We've got to get on Amazon.
And I'll give you one more.
Yeah.
Like especially if you have a TikTok audience behind it, you have a sample size of knowing who your audience is and a data set that you can extrapolate out to stores. It's different.
Yeah.
But if you all of a sudden have 10,000 cases gone and each one of those is a different person, now you know who your consumer is, how to advertise.
Yep.
Now you can walk into a chain store and say, hey, who do you reach? Oh, conveniently, here's who we reach.
Right.
So you have those data sets. And that is something that I think is very hard to understand, how to externally create data sets. Because everyone wants to tell you that they're going to give you data, right? But they're not going to give you the real data.
Right.
You need zero party data. You need your own data. So
Yeah.
Talking about supermarkets, I think one of the things that you guys, let's talk a little bit about NIL. It's three dirty letters. Honestly, in this show alone, we've had 7 episodes on it, and I still don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know who's regulating it. I don't know what's happening. But, you know, I do liken it to hitting the lottery, right? Especially when you're talking about college. You're talking, the University of Georgia has 3 quarterbacks that potentially can play in a year, right? And any school, in any position, mm-hmm. and you got to kind of take a guess. So we're not going to say the player's name because we don't need to muddy the waters, but you guys took a pretty big risk on an NIL deal. That player panned out to be one of the best in the nation. Talk about what the process was like, what you had initially thought it was going to be, and talk about as it was going, what it did for you.
So, I mean, we thought that we were just going to get an athlete. And honestly, you know, you think you get this athlete, he's in Athens. Every student on campus is going to drink this product because he has it, you know. Those are our initial thoughts of like, oh, this is going to be great, right? Yeah. There's a lot of issues with the NIL that I would say, and I would recommend to people if they're wanting to do this. And the thing is we got in the game pretty late with who we got in with last year. If you get in the game late when the season's starting, good luck getting time with them.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, anytime that there's possible Sunday mornings, you know, but who wants to do an event with an appearance on a Sunday morning necessarily? So if you're going to do an NIL deal, I recommend that you really start that process, if it's football, in January. You know, you need to get that deal locked in so you can plan and prepare and have things ready for the season. In our case, it was kind of a last minute.
Yeah.
I don't want to say last minute. We talked with the...
And we were talking about a different player originally. Like, it wasn't even on our real radar when we were initially handling the deal. We were talking about a completely different person.
And those conversations in the beginning are like you just said, what if they get hurt in spring practice, mm-hmm. right? And you pay this big lump sum of money, and now they're not playing season.
The biggest deal, you know? DJ Uiagalelei signed $1 million deal. He can't even throw the ball for Florida State.
Right? Oh, yeah? Right.
Yeah. He booed them to an 0-5. I mean, like, it's insane.
Another energy drink fuel on him.
You're taking these risks, you know. And I think when people don't understand the life of an athlete, right? If you are the star athlete, you are being bred mm-hmm. to be a prick from mm-hmm. the second you get to high school because everybody wants your attention and wants to sell you something and be a part of something. So I've also, because of what I do, I've seen it from the other side and how to not do it and how what mm-hmm. you can't expect out of these guys, right? Like, no offense, but like the contracts don't matter. Yeah. Right? Like, yeah, because what they're going to say is, oh, well, you had an opportunity, you didn't do it, so they didn't show up, so the contract's void. Like, they're just agents and all this stuff. It makes it dirty business. Now, that being said, to some capacity, you guys got a player who overexceeded on mm-hmm. the playing field, mm-hmm. which probably helped you get a spark in the right places, mm-hmm. which probably helped you give you some legitimacy when you're meeting with stores. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. talk about what you got out of it.
I would say I was in Athens last week and I ran into 2 guys in one of the C stores that we sell our product, and they were like, you're still with that particular player,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And I had to have a conversation with them about, you know, but I mean, it got our name out in Athens, Georgia for sure. Now, does every student go to the local convenience store and purchase a drink? Not necessarily. That's still on our part too, of getting out there and letting them try the product. But I do think it helped somewhat, especially geographically located where that particular player was.
Yeah,
I think it definitely we were brand new when we first got that deal.
Yeah,
and it really kind of put us on the map to an extent. Obviously, not as major as it could have been, but like even you guys. Like I remember hearing you guys talk about. I think Chuck and Turnoff were talking about the new deal that we had with him before we had even started talking to you guys about partnering.
Yeah,
and that kind of like just more people knew who we were because of the press release and like other companies picking up the story about that.
And if you're smart with that, man, that's worth the investment in itself.
Yeah.
Because you know that some companies, they just pay to put mm-hmm. a press release out. Yeah. Like organic fodder and social media. And like there is an earned media value to what these things, it's very hard to quantify. Mm-hmm. And anyone who gives it to you mm-hmm. is inflating it by 500%. Yeah. But there is a number on there. I remember, Brandon, one of the things you had told me was like, because you signed that deal, you were getting reached out to by like teams that are like, I want $84 million because you signed one deal. So talk a little about the aftermath and how quickly it was like, what? How did this happen?
It happened super fast. And when the press release goes out, right, then it's all in all the news outlets, right?
Yep.
And I was getting calls from all kinds of people. I mean, I tell people that
Did you put your name on the press release?
No, but
you got to go fake name.
Right.
Mike Concho.
Right, I don't know.
You got to go Mike Concho.
The The funniest one that I had is I had a meeting with the Los Angeles Dodgers right after that time period. You know, they were looking for their official energy drink. I got on the call with really no intentions, really, of being the official energy drink.
Why did you get on the call? Why didn't you get flown out to LA? Right. I mean, I would have been like, I expect a first class jet. It'll be here. And I actually want Shohei Ohtani to pick me up. Right. How's that sound?
Right.
And I got we were in Sports Illustrated articles, talking about the deal. Like, even after the deal ended, they were still, I think there was a brand new one when so-and-so had another deal pop up. That was pretty crazy. And we were tied into it, even though our deal had ended. So we were kind of still reaping benefits off of that, even though it's not going on anymore.
And look, there was risk involved. I think you guys came out on the right side of the risk, but there's a lot of people that are not going to. There's a lot of lack of regulation. There's a lot of things that happen. Like, once the player becomes a professional, all the contracts are void. So those people think they're going to strike it rich getting with this person when they're young. It's not true. It's a completely different contract because they're a professional now. That is one thing that they were clever to do, because the NFL didn't want people messing with their money, right? When you talk about college. So we're going to also talk about some of the downsides when a player does well and all of a sudden that renewal comes up. So you've been listening to the Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3, and we'll be right back with the Zero FG team.
Now back to the Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome back to the Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3. Nick Constantino here with the Zero FG team. And let's finish up the conversation about NIL. And I say it because what happens when the player is good, has a great season, goes to the very down to the wire, and then all of a sudden now the school's got money that they have to pay the kid. It's amazing how quickly there's a zero added to your bill. The deliverables are now cut in half of what they do, and they have like their third uncle's sister's mom on the contract looking to get paid because they want to be an offensive lineman. So like, talk about what that kind of the aftermath was of all of it, and kind of when you look backwards, why you guys were like, all right, this might not be the best way to continue.
Right. Well, when you have a player that does well the previous season, right, and they're going into the next season with more expectations,
And let's say well in this case is an understatement.
Right. Yes. Right.
Surpassed every expectation that anyone could have put on.
Absolutely. So when you go to have these negotiations, price tag is up. You know, as a company like us, we have to sit back and think, like, is it worth it, right? Yeah. Are the deliverables that we got last year, what are we going to get this year? Well, I think, and this is nothing against the agents that are supporting these guys, you know, but they're listening to those guys. The players are young, you know, and they're really just following the lead of their agent necessarily. Yeah. I feel as like if we could have talked to the particular player, we might have could have worked something out.
For sure.
But, you know, you've got their agent who's, look, let's face it, that's his career. He's trying to make money as well, right? I mean, he's trying to make money.
And not only that, but he's a dictator of the school. That's where some of those other players come in. Hey, we want to make sure everyone gets some love. And, you know, one of the things, you guys, I looked over the contract. I was just, you know, we were trying to lend a helping hand. I deal with this stuff all the time. What was fascinating to me is how poorly legally written the contract was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like 360 degree use. What does that mean? That he spins around in circles
right,
and he can use every side of him?
What does that mean?
What do these rules mean? Like, it was almost lazy. It was almost like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You're talking like a big chunk of change, and you can't even put the time to write real legal terms.
Yes.
Like, and you always feel like with contracts and agents, it's always a gotcha. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, it's a good thing that I've had to look over, so because I've caught a lot of those gotchas. Like, your guard is up so high.
Right.
And, like, honestly, I was this close. I took my LSATs. I was this close going to law school. And going through these processes, I'm so happy I didn't, because your job is to be greasy.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Like, your job is to be vague and greasy, so you can just bill more hours and charge more, and we wonder why society is going where it is. All right, so let's get more positive. So we got about, you know, 6 minutes left. What I want to talk about is what the future looks like. So, Sarah Lynn, we'll start with you. What does the future look like? What do you want to try? Where do you want to be? If you had an unlimited budget, what would you do? What were some things on the social media side that you want to see happen?
What I want to see, kind of how like Barstool, they get sent videos and then, you know, they post it. I think that would work so well for Zero FG. Me and Brandon were talking about that. All these comedians, or even if it's an influencer, sending in videos or having somewhere to submit videos, that's just so many different faces on our page to kind of give away that Zero FG mentality and the culture. I mean, obviously nobody's going to be drinking the drink, but these funny videos and stuff like that, I think will tie into Zero FG For unlimited budget, what do I
want to
do?
Well, first of all, what you talked about requires an unlimited budget because nobody's doing this stuff for free.
Let's you're right.
So I think you said it perfectly, right? Yeah. So here's the problem, right? Is that because you're now in an influencer world, there's now a marketplace for influencers, and there are 36,000 different companies that all have their hands out to get a cut of this influencer marketplace.
Very true.
Most things, it's going to collapse on itself. Because what happens is most of these influencers don't have the audiences that may resonate. So what are they offering? They're offering themselves. What are they worth? Nothing. You know, one of the things about, we talked about NIL, that player was worth something, but most of the guys on the team aren't worth anything without the big school letter on there, and the school won't let them use that because they have to get their own money.
Right.
So I think that's, you're right, with an unlimited budget, you can do that.
Okay.
Throw in someone a couple of grand, say, hey, give us a video when you're out, or do this, or we have a really cool prize, or we're going to take you all skiing in Aspen. Like, those are ways to do
brand
it.
Trip.
Great idea.
Those are ways to do it. Well, that's what I already know, because I got to go on one of those with Monster. They took us out to Park City, Utah, and I got to go do it with, like, all the snowboarders and everything, and it was the craziest freaking anyway. Okay, so that being said, I expect a trip somewhere cool.
I'm doing that today.
What are you? What about you? Events wise, what do you need? What would get the crowd going? What do you want? What do you want to see in the future?
I want to get involved with a lot of, like, it's, for lack of a better term, like more like redneck kind of fishing, hunting kind of events. Get involved with those. I think that our market, especially
you said
right
redneck,
now.
I did not.
Yeah,
the Yankee did not say redneck. Just so we're being clear here, I did not say it.
Yeah, like I think. Like, it just, right now our market is people who really, every step of their day is more just forced. They don't, like, they have a lot of different things. It's a blue collar worker that's really has to follow a schedule all day of, like, being at a work site, being at a construction site. And I really think, like, being in front of them with the, like, fishing, hunting tournaments, those kind of things, I think would be really good for us. But also just, like, we say where you don't have to jump out of planes, talking about other energy drinks. But I really want to see us get involved with some of, like, stunt driving. We're in talks with a guy from California right now who really, he has a crazy truck, 1,200 horsepower, and he just drives it, does crazy jumps, all kinds of stuff. I want to see us get involved with, like, real...
I know what you're saying.
I don't know how to word it.
Yeah, what you're saying is not over commercialized, not 16,000 video cameras going, like, grassroots. People go out and having fun.
Yes.
And I think it fits your brand to do it. And I think there's a lot of them out there. The problem is that everyone gets to the point where then they become their own influencer.
Yes.
And, like, you got to catch them at the right time, which is exhausting because, again, we're talking the risk reward. Every one of them is a risk. Like, at that time, what happens if they get too big? What happens if they're not big enough? What's the investment? I think that the hardest part that you guys have ahead of you, again, is that influencer marketplace is because it worked for one person, so now everybody wants to do it.
Yeah.
And everybody needs an influencer, and everyone needs this to be organic. And the world just doesn't work that way.
And making sure you have the right influencer that's not going to say something that's going to ruin you, that could just change everything for the company that endorsed them. Because all it takes is one bad endorsement, and then things can hit the wall.
That being said, I pray we leave that world.
Yeah.
Like, I wish everyone wasn't so freaking sensitive.
100%. That's what we're doing. That's what we're pushing.
If you don't like it, don't listen. No one's forcing you to listen to these things. If you don't like it, leave. No one cares about your opinion. And your job to just try to take somebody else down is because your own insecurities and stupidity in your own life. So
100%.
I pray and I hope, because we are at a point where it is as bad as it will get.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have to imagine you guys read some of your reviews, and there are people that are just there because they're like pissed off at their life, so they're trying to bring everyone else down with them.
Definitely.
Definitely that.
It can't get worse.
Yeah.
And I say that in watch. But it can't get worse. So hopefully we leave a point that allows some of this stuff, because we've taken a lot of the fun out of this stuff, man.
Oh, 100%.
For what it's worth, a lot of the fun has been taken. And honestly, one of the things, that it's not tooting our own horn, but because we're such a ragtag bunch, like, our tailgates still have a lot of that fun, man.
Yes.
Like, it's still a goofy, like, people are still like, wait, this is free, I can come in here. So, Brandon, you got a minute and a half, dude. What about you? What does the future look like? What are you looking forward to?
Well, hopefully over the next year, we're going to grow. And we just got a new chain. Convenience store chain out of Louisiana.
Cool.
Okay. They, as much networking as I do, and we go to these different events and we go to these trade shows, you know, we've been able to make some good connections, but not seal the deal. And this one actually came organically because they saw our social media. They got on our website and they called us. They have 59 stores in Louisiana, and we're going in their 2025 sets. So for me, it's about networking, getting with these companies that like our brand, love our culture, see us and see potential in us. I mean, the other day when these guys told us, we're high fives all around the office, right? And that's what we want to see. We just want to grow. But again, like you said earlier, not too fast, right? We have to tell ourselves, look, a step at a time.
Yeah.
This is a step in the right direction because we are looking to grow kind of organically in the Southeast is really where we're trying to grow. Yeah. We that's get over country. In Louisiana, you know, and they actually, now we're with a distributor there that's in Mississippi. So, you know, we're starting to cover the Southeast. Love and it. That is where I would like to see Zero FG by the end of 2025 as we've just grown throughout this region of the country. So
yeah, so my only recommendation is to continue to localize yourself. Yes. So for example, right? So at a tailgate, you've met the Heaven Hill guys, for example. Mm-hmm. Get with those Heaven Hill guys, get a recipe to make with bourbon.
Yeah.
Make sure you integrate in your market, right? Because if you're sitting there thinking the Atlanta things are going to work and Kentucky world doesn't work.
Oh, it's a whole different, right? It's a whole different
one
market.
These things are very different. And as much as in Atlanta, we like to think we're the cultural hub of everything, and to an extent we are, this is still a big city, some Kentucky folk, right? Like it's a different thing. So how do we do horse racing? How do we make a mule or something, a Kentucky mule with it? All those things are things people forget about because their eyes are on this big, huge scaling prize. But if you really want to make it, you got to localize and you got to get involved in that stuff. Like who knows what the answer is? Maybe there's jockeys that need to kick that horse a little faster, whatever the hell they do. Who knows what it is? Who knows? I think you can pass. I think we might make you a jockey for one of the social media posts.
What is That'd a jockey?
Oh, gosh. Have you never watched a horse race? Oh, you know what? That was such a bad question. We're going to end on that. Mark and Hammond on Action 106.3. We'll catch you next week.